The book of Revelation, chapter 17, verse 1. And there came one of the seven angels which had the seven vials, and talked with me, saying to me, Come hither, I will show unto thee the judgment of the great whore, that sitteth upon many waters, with whom the kings of the earth have committed fornication, and the inhabitants of the earth have been made drunk with the wine of her fornication. Babylon has come to remembrance before God, we read in the last chapter, to receive the cup at his hand, the cup of the wine of the wrath of God. We've talked about this a lot so far, but let's just kind of plunge in. Verse 3, So he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness. It was a spiritual journey to see a spiritual vision. And I saw a woman sit upon a scarlet-colored beast, full of names of blasphemy, having seven heads and ten horns. And the woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet color, and decked with gold and precious stones and pearls, having a golden cup in her hand full of abominations and filthiness of her fornication. And upon her forehead was a name written, and I can't read this the way it's written, because mystery belongs. On her forehead was a mysterious name written, the name of a mystery. Her name is not Mystery Babylon, it is a mysterious name. Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and abominations of the earth. And I saw the woman drunken with the blood of saints, with the blood of the saints, and with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. And when I saw her, I wondered with great admiration. You know, that word admiration is just, it's a related word to the earlier word wonder. It's sort of like, I wondered with great wonderment. Verse 7, And the angel said unto me, Wherefore didst thou marvel? I will tell thee the mystery of the woman, and of the beast that carrieth her, which hath the seven heads and ten horns. Really, he marvels at this thing. He knows, it's interesting because she's drunken. He knows what she's drunken with. The blood of saints, the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. And it's a wonder to him. He sees this vision of this great whore riding upon this beast with a golden cup, all this description given. And I have to continue because at least through verse 8, I think, and then we can kind of look at it. And in a sense, it's hard for me to read this at all without just taking all my knowledge into account. I mean, we've already talked about the great whore, what it is, what it symbolizes, and here it is. Verse 8, The beast that thou sawest was and is not, and shall ascend out of the bottomless pit, and go into perdition. And they that dwell upon the earth shall wonder, whose names were not written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, when they behold the beast that was, and is not, and yet is. Again, you know, this verse 8 really sort of identifies the beast. He comes out of the bottomless pit. There is an angel of the bottomless pit. There is a son of perdition who exalts himself above all that is called God. So however you want to characterize this, we can say a few things about the beast. He will have miraculous powers. He will be extremely deceptive, and he will deceive many people. You know, I remember back in the earlier part of the book when he says, you know, you suffer that woman Jezebel, who calleth herself a prophetess, to teach and seduce my servants to commit fornication. And I take that in a very carnal sense, but it does have a spiritual application, of course. Because everything really has a spiritual application. You know, we're exercising self-control in the flesh because we need to exercise self-control in the spirit. The man who originally taught me made it sound like all the reason for our sin was had to do with the flesh body. And I can't agree with that. It doesn't make sense, because then I would ask, well, what is Satan's excuse then? And the interesting thing is that church does not even really make a big deal about carnal sins. They always make it about the spiritual sins. Well, I'll tell you what. flesh body doesn't help you with spiritual sins. But if you have run with the footmen and they have wearied you, how shall you contend with horses? If you cannot handle carnal temptations, what makes you think you're going to be able to handle spiritual temptations, which are more subtle and more beguiling? Part of me just wants to just barrel through the whole chapter and then go through all the stuff we covered, because I want to bring it all together. So, verse 9, here's the mind that hath wisdom. The seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman sitteth. And there are seven kings. Five are fallen, one is, the other is not yet come. And when he cometh, he must continue a short space. And the beast that was and is not, even he is the eighth, and is of the seven, and goeth into perdition. And the ten horns which thou sawest are ten kings, which have received no kingdom as yet, but receive power as kings 1 hour with the beast. These have one mind, and shall give their power and strength to the beast. These shall make war with the Lamb, and the Lamb shall overcome them, for he is Lord of lords and King of kings, and they that are with him are called and chosen and faithful. I shall certainly have much to say about that. And he said to me, the waters which thou sawest, where the horse sitteth, are peoples and multitudes and nations and tongues. And the ten horns which thou sawest upon the beast, these shall hate the whore, and shall make her desolate and naked, and shall eat her flesh, and burn her with fire. For God hath put it in their hearts to fulfill his will and to agree, and to give their kingdom to the beast, until the words of God should be fulfilled. And the woman which thou sawest is that great city, which reigneth over the kings of the earth.
That great city, there their bodies shall lie in the street of that great city, which is called spiritually Sodom and Egypt, where also our Lord was crucified.
You know, I guess this would be a good time as any to tackle something called the historical interpretation. One time a guy emailed me and says, you know, I read how you came out of the ministry of the Shepherd's Chapel. I mean, not that I was involved with the ministry, I never was, but I, you know, like everyone who watches on TV, he encourages us to think that we are part of that ministry. You're in church right now. You know, and so I feel like I have a legitimate claim. I bought a lot of their materials, I bought all the books, I read them, I was into it. I mean, he taught me the Bible originally. I've come a long way since then. But this guy was saying that basically, while you haven't come out of his teaching, you still follow Jesuit futurism. And basically his assertion, and you may get this at some point if you believe like I do, like that the events in Revelation are futuristic. They would say, well, you know, the reformers understood that this all referred to the Catholic Church. It's all about, there's a historical interpretation. It's all about the Catholic Church.